Most researchers who investigate the New World Order at some point trace the movement back to Bavaria in the 18th century to a man named Adam Weishaupt, a professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt, a school of the Roman Catholic Jesuit order. Some claim that Weishaupt himself was a Jesuit. Others say that he was not. Nevertheless, the influence of this powerful order is not to be overlooked. From their beginning with founder Ignatius Loyola in the 16th century, the Jesuits were a subversive organization known for their lust for power, because of which they were suppressed by popes and banished by kings no less than 30 times from the nations of Europe. So nefarious were they that the Marquis de Lafayette in 1799 said of them, "It is my opinion that if the liberties of this country, the United States of America, are destroyed, it will be by the subtlety of the Roman Catholic Jesuit priests, for they are the most crafty, dangerous enemies to civil and religious liberty. They have instigated most of the wars of Europe." Napoleon Bonaparte, while lamenting his exile on St. Helena, said, "The Jesuits are a military organization, not a religious order. And the aim of this organization is power. Power in its most despotic exercise, absolute power, universal power, power to control the world by the volition of a single man." Even President John Adams wrote these shocking words in a letter to Thomas Jefferson. Of the Jesuits, he said, "If ever there was a body of men who merited eternal damnation on earth and in hell, it is this society of Loyolas." It was among such men that Adam Weishaupt gained the skills that would one day earn him the credit of being called the profoundest conspirator that has ever existed. Weishaupt had his own lust for power and formed a secret society whose plan was to revolt against all established authority on earth. He codenamed himself Spartacus and called his society the Illuminati. The name Spartacus pertains to the ancient gladiator who rebelled against the tyranny of Rome, while the name Illuminati pertains to the greatest rebel of all time. Author Myron Fagan writes that Weishaupt himself said that the word Illuminati is derived from Lucifer and means holders of the light.
The Illuminati is so called because they are the illumined ones. And they are illumined through, according to their own definition of the term, they are illumined by an understanding of the occult sciences, of the satanic sciences, of the mysteries religion. They are illuminated. They are not illumined according to scripture. Oh no. They are illumined according to occult doctrine, occult understanding, and occult power. And much of their occult power comes through an interaction with guiding spirits, which the Bible calls demons.
"For they are the spirits of demons that go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon." We read that Weishaupt began to write out the master plan that was designed to give the synagogue of Satan, so named by Jesus Christ, ultimate world domination, so they could impose the Luciferian ideology on the human race. But in order for Weishaupt to bring forth his new order, he needed to somehow destroy the old order. The method he chose was to bring about a world revolution. Professor John Robison, who exposed the Illuminati in his work titled Proofs of a Conspiracy, published in 1798, wrote, "The true purpose of the order was to rule the world. To achieve this, it was necessary for the order to destroy all religions, overthrow all governments, and abolish private property." Because the average man would not openly follow a satanic plan, the agenda of the Illuminati was to be concealed through secret societies, some of which trace themselves back thousands of years. It was these same powers that Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli warned were contending against the governments of the world.
This plan that goes back hundreds, if not thousands, of years, tends to be kept in the bowels of these blood oath secret societies. And by that I mean the Shriners, the Freemasons, the Odd Fellows, the Illuminati, the Order of the Palladium. There are literally dozens of names down throughout the centuries that this goes by. But it has to be in one of these groups where you have to swear to kill a fellow member of the society if they reveal the secrets, or you yourself be killed by a member of the society if you reveal the secrets. That's what blood oaths are. And they start out bad, but they get worse as you go up in the organization. Now, not all of them take it all that seriously. Some of them just do it because, as I was promised when I was 21, you become a Mason, your financial fortunes are guaranteed for the rest of your life. And, I bolted. I said, no, I'm not, I don't think Christ would approve of this.
Weissop saw in the ancient orders of Freemasonry an opportunity to commission foot soldiers for his cause of world domination. He wrote that none is fitter than the three lower degrees of Freemasonry. The public is accustomed to it, expects little from it, and therefore takes little notice of it.
Weishaupt felt that Masonry was the easiest way to get a good Christian guy on the path of destruction, essentially, where you can have him take little baby steps on this path. It's a system they've been working on for thousands of years. They've really got it down. They know how to gradually, gently corrupt people from Christendom, first of all, to deism. Of course, deism is where, yes, God started the world, but then he took off, and he has no place in the affairs of men now. And so you don't have to worry about God, you don't have to worry about heaven and hell, you just kind of do your thing, and everything will be okay. Deism to atheism is the next step. Atheism, where you claim there is no God. And then, of course, the next step is out-and-out Satanism. And interestingly enough, Satanists know there's God, know there's a heaven and hell, and they just choose hell. And they choose to drag as many people into hell as they can. Yes, Masons were instrumental in the founding of this country. A large percentage of the founding fathers were Masons. But that doesn't mean that a large percentage of the founding fathers were evil men. You have to look at Masonry as a way to get good Christians, to lure good Christians gradually over to deism, to atheism, and eventually to Satanism. That's the purpose of Freemasonry. It's to lure good people into these evil roads. Why? Because if you have an evil secret society where you're trying to create the Antichrist here on Earth, not many people are going to come and join up. So you have to convince them that they're doing something good for the world, gradually get them in, and little by little try to corrupt them.
Weishaupt gained the allegiance of low-level Masons by telling them that the Illuminati held the true sense of Christianity. Behold our secret, he said, if in order to destroy all Christianity, all religion, we have pretended to have the sole true religion, remember that the end justifies the means. Because of this, some have argued that Weishaupt corrupted Freemasonry.
He didn't have to corrupt Masonry. Masonry is a corruption skateboard ready-made for his purposes. There's no difference with what Weishaupt did. He just put a name to it and he got caught. That's the only difference. That whole system, a sleigh ride into hell, descent into hell, has always been in existence. It's just Masonry formalized it, categorized it, worked on it, perfected it, and then Weishaupt came along and said, well, now how do we make them go a little faster? That's all he did.
Samuel Morse, of course, is the inventor of Morse code that was used for many, many years. And Samuel Morse wrote a book called Foreign Conspiracies Against the Liberties of the United States. It was published in 1835. And he shows in that book that the Holy Alliance and the Leupold Foundation out of Austria, controlled by the Jesuits, and the Jesuits themselves were the agents to overthrow the liberties of the United States, the Federal Republic of the United States, and to replace it with a papal centralized government as the Vatican is run.
But today, one looks around us to see U.S. presidents and congressmen and women groveling before the Pope. Lincoln's words would seem ironic. Consider this also. In April 2008, the President of the United States, George W. Bush, rushed out to meet the Pope at his plane. Does this not seem to be odd behavior? For the first time in history, a U.S. president went out to meet a religious leader, or for that matter, any leader, upon his entry into the U.S.
No president in the entire history of the United States has ever greeted a foreign diplomat like that, ever. They wait until they're brought into Washington or something. They don't go out on the tarmac. This is a first.
What makes this even more egregious is that the current Pope is a former head of the Office of Inquisition and a former member of the Nazi Party in his youth.
You know, the Cardinal Ratzinger was the Grand Inquisitor of the Vatican before he became Pope Benedict. You're aware of that. I assume other people are not aware of that. For a Jew, the Inquisition has such awful, awful memories. And we are inviting the head of the Inquisition to the Jewish state. I gave a lecture yesterday, and these are the points that I brought up. You don't invite the Grand Inquisitor to Israel. It's that simple.
How did we go from a nation on the alert against the Pope and the Jesuits' desire to bring America down to one of accepting them as friends? Simply put, we have sold out. It has not gone unnoticed that several Protestant presidents have attended Mass and taken communion at Catholic churches. Since one cannot take communion at a Roman Catholic service if one is not Catholic, several presidents have misled their supporters into thinking they are Protestant when they are not. Furthermore, those in power are often Roman Catholics outright, so it is expected that they will obey orders from the Pope. From U.S. presidents to kings and queens to religious leaders throughout the world, those in power meet the Pope and bow down to him. Even when President Obama went to the Vatican in July 2009 to discuss the world economic situation, he too bowed to the Pope. Upon leaving, President Obama said, "We look forward to a very strong relationship between our two countries." It is important to remember these words of President Obama and what they mean. Territorial ruler, the name of his country since 1929, is Vatican City.
The Pope is a monarch. He actually, according to various books, the Pope is the monarch of the world. Not just a religious leader, he is actually a political leader. The Vatican is actually a small area over in Rome whereby the Pope is the ruler of that small area. The actual name Vatican I found very interesting. It actually means worship of the divine serpent. So we find that the very basis of the Vatican, the very word itself, means the worship of serpents.
But from Rome's perspective, the Pope rules over more than Vatican City. He rules over the earth, both spiritually and materially, or temporally. According to the Roman Catholic teaching, the Pope can keep you out of heaven, and he has absolute authority over you on earth.
And when I speak of the Pope, I speak of the papacy, that the papacy claims its two powers. Its first power is universal spiritual power over all individuals, that every person must be subject to the spiritual power of the Pope, that there is no salvation outside of the Catholic Church, which is the doctrine of the Council of Trent, as reaffirmed in the documents of Vatican II of the 1960s. It's still on the books of canon law. And the other power of the Pope, which is the second key, as you see the two keys in the Pope's flag with the triple crown, Lord of Heaven, Lord of Earth, Lord of Hell, and the two keys, spiritual power, the second key is the temporal power. And the temporal power is this, that the Pope believes he has the right to rule the government, the civil government of every nation. That temporal power has never been denied, it's never been disclaimed.
But there is no question that the Pope wields both swords, both a spiritual sword that the public sees, as well as a political sword, which most people do not see.
All right, y'all. So for this part of the video, I wanted to come in and, you know, just kind of talk about those last couple of minutes of the clip that just got done playing. I thought it was really, really interesting. And by the way, one of the clips from this video is from a video I did on my old channel that got deleted. So I did two videos on the Jesuits. I did a video on the Black Pope, and it was just a regular video on the history of the Jesuits, which one of the clips from this video was in that video way back on my first channel, right? So I thought it would be a super dope idea to come back and just do an updated video of this and add in some new content as well. So, you know, I'm going to throw this on Patreon for y'all to see first. So y'all let me know what y'all think about this video. And eventually I may put this on YouTube as well. So just to talk about that last clip, you know, and pretty much really in general, I wanted to do the video again just to kind of know the history of the stuff that we're looking at, because I know most of y'all got into, you know, all of this conspiracy stuff over, you know, just seeing the word Illuminati. You know, everyone saw the word Illuminati when you first got into this conspiracy stuff. Just that word alone was, you know, the major topic about everything. Illuminati this, Illuminati that, you know. These days it's a little bit different because it's became kind of like, you know, it's not so much of a scary word anymore. People know more information about it. People know it's basically a group of people, you know. So a group of very powerful people, very powerful elite people, elite occultists. But anyway, you know, so I thought it would be dope just to go back over the history of it, what the word Illuminati actually means, the energy behind the word, because I feel like it's a very powerful word, because as y'all heard in the clip, the word literally is derived from the word Lucifer. So it is directly attached to the energy of Lucifer. That's why the word Illuminati itself looks like a trick. You know, like, you know, like y'all might have seen like stickers and stuff that the word tricky will look like a trick. You know, like that's kind of like how Illuminati looks. It looks like a spell. The word looks like a spell. With the I's and the L's, the way that they are perfectly like aligned with each other, the entire word gives off demonic energy. Just saying it, you can feel it. When you look at the word itself, you can feel it, you know. So that's what I think and feel about the word Illuminati itself. I thought that was super interesting. But what I thought was even more interesting was what they were saying about the Pope, as far as how the Pope yields both physical and spiritual / political swords to the world, and how the Roman Catholics believe that he basically possessed the power to send you to heaven or keep you here on this earth, basically lord over heaven, hell, blah, 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 you know, basically saying that he is like the ultimate ruler of this world. He's like the ruler over each individual in this world as well. Everyone owes, like, you know, their respects to him, basically. And I take that as them saying that because, you know, how all the presidents go and bow to him and all that good stuff, right? So I felt like there has to be a reason why they're bowing to him, because this is not some powerful 6'5" huge guy, you know, and he's so scary looking. You know, this is the Pope. He's frail. He's an older man. There's nothing scary about him. So it's like, all right, why are these so, you know, why are these super powerful people bowing to the Pope? Why is he so powerful? What does he hold over these people that run these countries? You know, heads of state, heads of countries, presidents of countries. What does he have over these people, and what do they owe him? That's the main question. And in my mind, it kind of, it just made me think about, okay, well, if they believe that he holds a spiritual sword over basically this world, like he's the, you know, he's kind of like the closest thing to, to Satan, basically. To me, that is why they bow to him and, you know, he holds basically the rank that he does. Number one, Vatican City, they hold all knowledge of the world, basically. All knowledge, all secrets of history. They know it all. The Pope knows everything. So you could imagine having that kind of knowledge. Now, you know, and I can't say everything about the universe because they're still finding out stuff. But I'm just saying all the lies and stuff that we're trying to find out, they know everything. So, but they're not bowing to him just because he holds all the secrets of the world. Shit, Obama know it all too. Once they become presidents, they know everything. They know about Antarctica and all that stuff they're keeping from us. They know all that shit. They know it. There's not big aliens riding around in planes. They know all of that shit. So they're not, you know, they're not bowing to the Pope just because of that kind of information, you know, just because that's the Vatican and blah, blah, blah. I see it as because he is the closest thing to Lucifer. He is the closest one. He is like the spawn. He is like damn near, you know, he's probably damn near possessed by the spirit of Lucifer. He's a little spawn of Satan. So that, to me, that is why I believe they bow to him. Because he's the closest thing to their master. He's the closest thing to what they believe in. You know, who they do every single thing for. Because if you think about it, if you know all the knowledge of the world, then that means you know the devil. Because who is the god of this world? The devil is. So to know all the knowledge of this world, to have access to that, that means you are right there at the devil's door. You're not knocking at it. You're already in the house. You've been with the devil. So to me, that's why I think he yields, you know, both physical and spiritual swords and political swords as well. Basically, the Vatican controls damn near everything in this world. That is the way that I see it. You know, it's the way that I understood all of the information. But I don't want to just keep going on and on and on and on. I do got another clip that I want to show y'all in this part one. Definitely going to come back with a part two to this video. So y'all already know what's going on, man. I hope y'all enjoy this video. Please give me any feedback and just, you know, let me know what y'all want me to cover. If y'all do want a part two to this video, and we'll knock it out. So with that being said, man, I really do appreciate y'all. Y'all already know what's going on. It's Black Balloon, and I'm going to see y'all soon. All right, I'm out.
We have discussed the popes and the papacy, but what about the other group Lincoln mentioned? He spoke of the sinister influence of the Jesuits. Who are the Jesuits?
Jesuits are a group of people that were raised up right around 1535, 1540. Their leader was Ignatius Loyola. They basically had two purposes. One purpose was to destroy the Protestant Reformation. Because as you remember, Martin Luther had appeared at the Diet of Worms in 1521, stood before Charles V and the Holy Roman Empire. And so the Catholic Church sought to stop the Protestant Reformation that Luther began, and they couldn't do it. And so about 20 years after Luther stood at the Diet of Worms, the Jesuit order was created. And one of their purposes was to destroy every vestige of the Protestant Reformation, both in the religious realm, in the political realm, and in the economic realm, because the Protestant Reformation not only affected the religious arena, it also affected the political and the economic arenas as well. That was one goal of the Jesuit order. The other aspect was to restore the supremacy and dominance of the Pope throughout the world.
The Jesuit order has directed popes concerning policy, both foreign and domestic, since 1540, in particular, since the Council of Trent.
The Council of Trent, indeed, it started in 1545. It went for the next 18 years. That doesn't mean that they stayed there for 18 years. They met in different places, but over that period of time, the various leaders of the Catholic Church and the newly formed Jesuit order would come together from time to time and discuss how the Catholic Church would respond to the teachings of the Protestant Reformation. Would they accept them, or would they completely reject them?
So the doctrines that were being championed at the Reformation, the doctrines of grace, justification by grace through faith, justification by faith alone, sola scriptura, only the scriptures, by grace alone, through faith alone, etc., etc., no baptismal regeneration, that there is only salvation in Christ, that we do not participate in our salvation, it's not a joint effort of man and God, etc., etc., etc. All the doctrines championed by the Reformers were absolutely accursed and condemned and reprobated by the Council of Trent that the Jesuits really oversaw from 1545 to 1563. It was an 18-year council in the town of Trent, Italy, and that is the foundation of what we call the Counter-Reformation.
And the Council of Trent laid out the focal point, the direction that the Catholic Church would go for the next four centuries. Basically, at the Council of Trent, they decided that tradition and what the church fathers of the Catholic Church taught would continue to be the sole authority in the Catholic Church.
The head of the Jesuits is the Superior General of the Order. He is called the Black Pope.
The head of the Jesuit Order is the Black Pope. The man who is currently there, he was just recently elected Nicholas Adolphus. The Black Pope is the head of the Jesuit Order. He is called the Black Pope not because he is of African origin, but because he is in the dark. We see the white pope, we see Pope Benedict XVI, because he's visible and all the world knows who he is. But the black pope remains in the dark, behind the scenes, and so few people know he even exists. But that's why he's called the black pope, and he's the one who heads the Jesuit order.
There is an ongoing war against anyone who resists the power of the pope. And this war is directed by the Jesuits. This war is not waged openly by the Jesuits. The Society of Jesus moves in the shadows. They infiltrate and get others to do the dirty work of assassination. If armed conflict is needed, they use the army of one nation to bring a disobedient nation to its knees.
The Jesuits would do that very thing. They were very intelligent. They're still very intelligent people. What they would do is they would infiltrate. They did it through economics, through the merchants. They would then come in, start teaching. They were very wise people. They would then infiltrate not only into schools, but they then would infiltrate into local government and then rise up to higher government officials. We find that repeatedly in the book by Avril Manhattan called Vietnam, Why Did We Go?, where he talks about how they followed this exact plan throughout Southeast Asia. They did it in Japan. They did it in China. They did it in Korea. They did it in Vietnam. They did it all along the Pacific Rim. Well, eventually what would happen, you would have created Catholic cities where all the people in towns would become Catholics. Well, they would then try to put their Catholic ideals onto the major religious populace of a country. In the Far East, of course, the major religious populace would be the Buddhists. So these Catholics in these countries, these converts to Catholicism, they would try to push their Catholicism on their Buddhist friends. And when the Buddhist friends rejected it, the Catholics would start to use force. Well, then the Buddhists would appeal to the local governments, the state governments, the national governments, and then there would be revolution. It got so bad in Japan that in 1639, the Japanese emperor, he said, no more Catholics, no more Europeans will come to our island again. And that ban stayed there for almost two centuries. This happened throughout the Far East.